Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
Where we make working money fun, relatable, and informative.
And if you've been enjoying the podcast, be sure to join our email list by visiting paypal.co/email. You'll receive our free 15-minute money plan, interesting reads, and much more. Again, that's paypal.co/email.
And on today's show, you're going to get some dope negotiation tips. But before we get to that, man, you've aged a year. You know, I know you were just celebrating a birthday. How was that whole experience for you? Do you feel older? Like, do you feel like you got to buy a walker? Do you feel peak washed? Do you feel youthful again? What's up with that?
I definitely don't feel youthful. For those in the listening audience, I'm 1 year closer to 40, on the wrong side of 30, but technically arriving at 36. And I got to say, it felt pretty. First of all, I had a very like old man birthday.
What does that mean?
Like, it was very age appropriate. I went to a tailgate, you know, it was a bunch of friends. We drank, but we didn't really even drink enough to keep up with the other tailgaters. Like, you know, it's like we were looking around every now and then like, man, we the old ones out here. And then I think at one point somebody counted the gray hairs in my beard. And then we went home. I had some water, took a nap. Sobered up for dinner, had a nice laid back dinner with the missus. Missus was in town. And then we stepped out, but we couldn't even hang all night. I think we left early. We had VIP and everything. We had VIP behind the stage. You know, so my friend's a DJ out here. Some of y'all know DJ AC. He did our, I'll get it in the show notes, but he did the soundtrack for the Debt Free. So paychecksandbalances.com/debt free. The score. That's what I was trying to come up with. He did the score for that soundtrack. If y'all have not had an opportunity to see it, again, that's paychecksandbalances.com/debt free. And then I was asleep by like 12. So I feel like that was like probably the most washed, like age appropriate, but very fun birthday I had. And I feel not young, but like awake, not woke. But awake, like very aware of my age, very comfortable where I am. I'm glad with what I have reached and comfortable with what I have to do next. So it felt very 36, probably the most age appropriate birthday I've had to date.
That's what's up, man, for sure. I'm looking forward to March, because then I'll be the same 1 year closer to 40. And I'm trying to get back in shape, man. I'm trying to not get to the birthday and then decide it's time to take charge of my fitness and my health, trying to be proactive about that so that I ride into 36 feeling good. But a tailgate sounds very fatherly. Like somebody was home watching the kids, you were out with the fellas, you know, having some burgers, having some brews, and then you went about your day.
It was a good look. It's definitely very Texan. This is only my second season doing a tailgate. Like my first tailgate was last year and I only went to one. So this year I went to like three. So they are definitely older crowd, washed friendly. So it's definitely a lot of washed jeans out there among the crowd. You know, a lot of 40, 50 year old gentlemen reliving their college years in an age appropriate environment. And there was actually kids and family there. It's a very family friendly environment. And I will say it was like, and I, you know, I won't pigeonhole too much or rabbit hole too much, but it, for me, 31 and 36 was more revealing than 30 and 35 respectively. So people tell you like, those are the years and you know, you have this great awakening. It's like, not really, not for me. But the year after is like, man, I'm in my 30s. Now I'm like, man, I'm almost 40. So for some reason, 31 and 36 was more hashtag woke.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm excited for my birthday, but now I don't know. I'm not sure what type of revelations I'm going to have. But hey, we're still alive. That's what's important.
There we are.
And so anyway, on today's show, I'm chatting with Kwame Christian, who first appeared on Paychecks and Balances on PB21 in 2016. And I think he was the first guest that we ever had on this podcast. He's the founder and director of the American Negotiation Institute, as well as a mediator, lawyer, and speaker, always traveling. Every time I see him on the gram, he on a flight, he in a hotel somewhere. He also has an exciting announcement that I think a lot of the PNB family will be interested in. So ladies and gents, here's our chat with Kwame, and we hope you enjoy. Hey, Kwame, so thanks so much for coming back on the podcast, man.
My pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
So you were previously on episode 21 back in September 2016, which is crazy that it's been over 2 years since you've been on the show. That's kind of wild as I think about that.
That is wild. That is crazy. You know what? Fun fact, I think, was I the first interview on the show?
You were, it was pretty close. I think you were up there or one of the first few.
Okay. Okay.
Cool, I know that cool. For sure.
But man, it's good to be back regardless. I loved it. I really enjoyed my time on the show and I'm excited to come back.
And so for those who didn't check out the previous episode, tell the good people of PNB a little bit about yourself, man.
Yeah, so I am a business attorney by trade, and my undergrad is in psychology, then have my JD and Master of Public Policy. And so I practiced law for a few years, and then I started the American Negotiation Institute. So that's what I do now. So I have the Top Ranked Negotiation podcast on iTunes, and I travel the country doing workshops and that focus on negotiation and conflict management. So essentially, with everything that I do right now, the goal is to help people to overcome the fear and anxiety that they feel in difficult conversations and help to make the conversations a little bit easier by giving some simple tactics that they can use to get more.
I see that you've had some practice going through this, bro.
Oh, absolutely.
So what have you been up to since the last appearance? I mean, I realize that that's a pretty broad question. I know that you've been doing some speaking, you've had some pretty cool things happen over the past couple of years. So what's the quick catch up?
Absolutely. So the podcast has blown up. That's been phenomenal. So now it's have listeners in 181 different countries. Then last year I had a TED Talk that went that did well. It was called Finding Confidence in Conflict. And this year, after people from the who were podcast listeners and people who saw the TED Talk, they were asking me to write a book. And so I'm a people pleaser, I guess. So here's the book. So coming out this week is my book, and it's a kind of an expansion of the TED Talk. It's been a wild ride. It has been a wild ride, but it's been a lot of fun doing it my way and helping a lot of people around the world while doing it.
And we'll definitely talk more about the book, but how was that TED Talk prep process? Because to me, that sounds really stressful.
Yeah, it is stressful. And the thing is, even when people see me talk and they know that predominantly what I do is go into companies and do these workshops on negotiation and conflict management, they assume that I don't have stage fright. But the funny thing is, I remember in high school when I had to read announcements one time, one of my friends came up to me afterwards and he said, Kwame, I could not tell if you were crying or talking. Couldn't tell the difference. It was terrible. And so that was one of the fears I had to overcome coming into college. And because I realized I wanted to be a person who could influence people and help people and motivate them to overcome their fears, I needed to get over my fear in order to do that. So the funny thing about me and public speaking is the fact that, like I said, I still feel the same way. But and this is me relying on my psychology stuff. Your body has a limited response to these fearful things. So for instance, if you are afraid of something, your heart rate would elevate, your blood pressure would go up, you might start to perspire, and then your breathing would get kind of shallow. What's interesting is that if you're really excited, let's say you have a crush and the crush talks to you. Oh my gosh.
you might not have me because I'm a G.
Right. Well, us mortals, we might have that response. But it's the exact same thing. Our heart rate elevates, our breathing gets shallow, and we might start to perspire. The only thing that differs is our perception of the experience. And so this is called appraisal, cognitive appraisal. And so what I did is I went through a process called cognitive reappraisal. So now when I speak, instead of interpreting that fear response as something to be afraid of, I interpret it as excitement. My heart is racing, I'm perspiring, my breathing is getting shallow, and I'm feeling that way because I'm excited. This is an opportunity. And just that simple mental shift helped me to perform better, even though I'm feeling the exact same way. So going into the TED Talk in front of 1,300 people, and I know it's going to be recorded, I was terrified, absolutely terrified. But, you know, thinking about it differently and focusing on the opportunity on the back end really helped me to get through it.
Now, are there other areas where you have that same response where you get anxious? And so beyond the TED Talk, whether it's talking to potential clients, trying to close a deal, figuring out bills?
Yeah, definitely the bills. But the funny thing about me and the story with this book is I'm a recovering people pleaser. You know, so for me, difficult conversations was always a source of anxiety for me. But I recognized that if I wanted to be an attorney, I needed to be able to negotiate effectively and actually have these conversations in a meaningful way. And so much like my fear of public speaking, I had a fear of difficult conversations. And really, it's my background in psychology that helped. And so the thing that a lot of people don't know is the fact that I wanted to be a clinical psychologist. That's what why I got my psych degree, because I wanted to help people. That was always the goal. Wanted to help people overcome their personal barriers to achieving what they wanted to get out of life. But then I switched to law because I said, well, you know, if I become a politician, I can affect policy and then I could help more people. And so that's why I got the Master of Public Policy and law degree. But now you see what I'm doing now, it's kind of reverting back to the psychological roots. Because like I said, the biggest barrier people face is fear and anxiety before the conversation. They don't feel confident. And so for me, when I was dealing with that when I was younger, I utilized the fundamentals of cognitive behavioral therapy. I treated my fear of difficult conversations just like I would a phobia going through therapy. And so I did that for a number of years, and now here I am, an attorney, a mediator, and somebody who travels the country teaching people these skills. And so with my book, the first half of the book is walking people through my story and how you could utilize the same skills, the same research-based tenets of cognitive behavioral therapy to overcome that anxiety and have more confidence in the difficult conversation. So you get that mindset. So you're in the right place mentally and emotionally before the conversation. And then in the second half of the book, I give a single technique, just a single, straightforward, easy to use technique, because I recognize that when you're stressed out or afraid or in the heat of the moment, most likely you're not going to be able to dig down deep into your bag of tricks and figure out a strategy that works in the situation. Most people are going to only remember one or two things. So I said, all right, my book is going to just go really deep into a single framework that I created based on my experiences as a mediator and attorney. And the cool thing about it is that it works for any type of negotiation, from the dining room table all the way to the boardroom.
And so this magical framework, I know we talked a little bit about it offline as it related to a situation that I will not talk about on the podcast, but tell people a little bit more about that. What's it called? How does it work? What's the basis?
Yeah, so the framework is called Compassionate Curiosity. And so it is a three-step process that starts with first acknowledging emotions. The next step is to get curious with compassion. And then the third step is joint problem solving, so collaborative negotiation. Before the negotiation happens, when you're trying to strategize and prepare and figure out where you stand, there's an internal negotiation where you're negotiating with yourself. You can use the framework and shine the light on yourself, acknowledge your own emotions, get curious, and engage in joint problem solving to figure out what you want and why and what works for you as far as solving this problem. And then once you're in the midst of the actual negotiation, you can use that exact same framework to persuade effectively and deal with the emotional difficulties of the other side in order to collaboratively achieve an outcome that works for both parties.
All right. So I jotted down a couple of scenarios. And so what we're going to attempt to do here is I'll read the scenarios I jotted down, and then we'll apply that framework to them. And of course, if you want to ask clarifying and follow-up questions, I'll try to come up with some additional details to fill in. But I thought this might be a good exercise to go through for people to see this in action.
Yeah, man, that'll be fun. And quick question, do you want to do the internal negotiation first and then the external, show how it works in both situations, or just focus on the outside?
For the first one, we'll do both and see how that goes.
Cool. We'll freestyle it.
All right. And so I'm sitting here trying to get my notebook turned up all nerd style. Let's say someone has a significant other that's horrible at budgeting and managing money. And one person wants the relationship to move forward, but they can't get over their partner's financial awfulness. They're just like, yo, this person, man, woman, other, they're not responsible with their money. I really like them. I really care about them. And when I try to bring up money, it seems to be a sore spot and they feel like I'm creeping too much into their life. So how would you apply the framework to that situation?
So what that person needs to do is first look inside themselves and say, all right, what am I feeling? Why does this bother me? Because every conflict starts with a signal. We know something is up. There's something wrong, but we don't exactly know what it is. And so let's go deeper into this analysis. So what am I feeling? So how about I be the financial conscious person and Rich, you will be my significant other. You're such a lucky man.
I mean, it's 2018, man.
You are the lucky man. I'm a catch. Okay, here it is. So in my analysis, I'm acknowledging emotions. So what am I feeling? I'm feeling a little bit anxious because I ask myself, why am I feeling anxious? I'm feeling anxious because in my past, I had a situation where my parents were not very financially responsible, and that caused a lot of discomfort in my family. So the anxiety is really coming from a feeling of a lack of safety. I'm also a little bit frustrated because it doesn't seem like Rich is paying much attention to my emotional needs here, because I kept mentioning that this is an issue, but he hasn't adjusted or really taken it very seriously. So I'm frustrated as well.
Sounds like my real life, but I'm gonna let that go. I feel like I've actually gotten this exact feedback before, but keep going.
Oh, this is awesome. Perfect. Good. And so let's stick with anxious, frustrated, and feeling a little bit of a lack of safety. So those are the emotions. And so we looked into it. Now we got curious with compassion. And that's something that's not to be overlooked, the compassion side, because sometimes, especially with men, we're not very comfortable addressing our emotional needs. And so we can, in this stage, we might acknowledge our emotions, say, yeah, I feel unsafe, but I shouldn't feel that way. That's not right. I'm a man. I should be strong. You know, so that's why the compassion side is important, because if we judge ourselves at this stage, then it creates an atmosphere within ourselves where we're afraid to be vulnerable. That triggers shame. And now we don't get any more emotional insight through this process. So it's important to address, to go through that fact-finding process with compassion. And then the third one, joint problem solving, this raises a lot of eyebrows. So Kwame, how do I engage in joint problem solving if it's just me? And so in this stage, what we're doing is we're trying to get our hearts and minds on the same page. Because as a mediator, I've seen this a lot of times, somebody might be presented with an offer that makes financial sense and makes legal sense, but would kill them inside emotionally. They might feel like they're capitulating. Even though a settlement would be good, at a settlement at this number would make rational sense, emotionally it doesn't sit well with them. So what's important at this stage is to do an evaluation and figure out what your emotional needs are through this interaction, and then figure out what your substantive needs are during this interaction, and then put those two things together to figure out what options you can bring up during the negotiation or the conflict that would work for you emotionally and substantively. And so that's how you prepare yourself and have that internal negotiation before you have the external negotiation.
Nice, nice. And so I'm going to add a little follow-up to this. So let's say you've done all this preparation, you go to have the conversation, and you get the response of, oh, you know, it's always something, you know, it seems like I can't do anything right, like you're always complaining, or you know what, it's me saying this, yo, man, it feels like there's always something, I can't do anything right, like, yo, I'm really not trying to hear this right now.
I love this. Yes. So this is now we're shifting to the external negotiation. Now, before we talk about how the compassionate curiosity framework is applied here, I think it's important to talk about the sources of breakdown, so the sources of the breakdown of communication. Because we've all had situations where we're having a negotiation or a conflict or just a conversation in general, but it starts to go off track. Something went wrong and I don't know what. The tone changed, something changed, and this is falling apart, but I don't know why. And I don't know what to do to get it back on track. So with what you said there, you said, it always seems like there's something wrong. I'm always messing up. I don't like you kind of, you know, ragging on me all the time. And so, okay, I have this signal now that something just went wrong. So there are three reasons why a conversation breaks down. The conversation breaks down for either an issue with the frame, the pace, or the direction of the conversation. So again, it's the frame, pace, or direction. So frame is the storyline you put on the conversation. So why are we having this conversation? What is the point? What's the end goal? Where are we now and where do we want to go? The next thing is the pace. This is how fast the conversation happens. From my analysis of difficult conversations, seeing different negotiations and conflicts, typically when things start to get heated, the conversation starts to go really quickly. The pace goes up. And when you're going faster, two things are happening. First of all, you're losing control of the conversation and nobody's listening. And second of all, you're just making points back and forth. It's not even a conversation. It's not about coming together. It's about winning. So you want to slow things down. And then the third thing is direction. There are going to be issues that are pertinent to this conversation that actually matter. But then there are going to be issues that could be talked about, but don't relate at all to this conversation. So for example, Rich, if you would have said, it always seems like it's a problem. I remember that one time when your mom came over and she did blah, blah, blah. Okay, that is irrelevant. That's not helpful. And so we want to let those things go and reorient the conversation back. So with you, what you said, that was an issue of the frame. The storyline is messed up because in your head, the storyline is I'm the problem and now we need to address why I'm so terrible. And so now what I need to do is say, Rich, listen, man, you know I love you. And now the reason I'm having this conversation is because I care about you and I care about us. And I want to make sure that this thing goes forward. And in order for us to go forward, this is one of those issues that we need to work through. It's not going to be pleasant, for sure, having this conversation. But the reason I'm having it is because I care about you and I want to try to make this work out.
We're taking a quick break to tell you a little about today's sponsor, Simple Contacts, which is a game changer for anyone who wears contact lenses. If you're team contacts, you know the annoyance of running out of lenses and having to schedule an appointment to get a new prescription, which likely means you're losing 1 to 2 hours of your day, if not more, to get there, do an exam, and get back to work, your boo, or whatever. With Simple Contacts, you can take a vision test on your computer or phone from anywhere in less than 5 minutes. I did mine in my living room. All I had to do was put my eyes near my computer's camera for the first part and then stand back 10 feet and read a few lines like a standard eye exam. Once I submitted the test, I got a text within minutes telling me my results would be passed to a licensed doctor and I'd hear back in a day. And since my prescription hadn't changed, praise the Lord, the doctor renewed it for a year and my new contacts were in my mailbox a few days later. Mad simple, yo. And they got all the brands, all of them. The online vision test was $20, the shipping was free, and the contacts ended up costing less than what I would pay when I go into the office for a formal exam. Now, let me be clear. This isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye exam, but it is the easiest way to renew your prescription and reorder contacts if your vision hasn't changed. And to top it off, they've got over 5,000 five-star reviews in the App Store. To get $20 off your order, visit simplecontacts.com/paychecks or enter paychecks at checkout. Again, to save $20, visit simplecontacts.com/paychecks or enter paychecks at checkout. You won't be disappointed. And now back to the show. You know what, man? After hearing that, I understand more. I'm ready to have a peaceful conversation with you. Even though I feel like in real life, it probably wouldn't be that simple, but that framework makes a lot of sense. And I feel like people are going to be able to apply that to not just talking about budgeting or whatever else, but having a conversation about anything within their relationship.
Absolutely. And the thing about framing is you want to do it early and often. So before I even tell you what I'm talking about, I want to start off that with that frame. So you can stay in that frame the whole conversation. And then if you start to get out of that frame, if you start changing the storyline, I want to stop the conversation immediately and bring us back to that frame. And so with these conversations, they're easier to control if you start controlling from the beginning. And so if you wait to assert the frame halfway through the conversation, it might be too late to bring that conversation back. And you want to also make the frame in a way that the other person would seem absolutely ridiculous if they were to reject it. You want it to be so positive and so good for both sides, then you want to paint a picture that is so glowing that it would look absolutely ridiculous for you to reject the frame. So it is a yesable proposition from the jump.
Got you, man. So that's scenario one. You want to do one more?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. So what about someone, and so at my day job, we're in performance review season. We're getting toward the end of the year, so a lot of people are about to get into the whole self-review, performance review cycle thing, which more times than not impacts bonus, raise, whatever else in terms of their compensation. So how about someone who feels like they've gotten some unfair feedback from their manager? And by unfair feedback, I have this belief that when you go into your performance review, nothing should be a surprise. And if it is a surprise, your manager hasn't done a good job. And so someone goes into a performance review conversation with their manager. They think that they've done a great job, but they get some unfair and difficult feedback that they had never heard before. And that ultimately impacted their compensation for the next year. And they still want a raise or a bigger raise or a bigger bonus than what they're seeing there. Now, this is one of those things that may not be able to be fixed in the spot, but it's also, I think, a good opportunity for somebody to practice these skills of negotiation, because let's say that there's not an adjustment immediately and they don't ultimately win an extra $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever it is, they're at least planting the seed for things to go in the right direction going forward.
Absolutely. And here's one of the things. We need to think about negotiation, not in terms of a single conversation, but in terms of the lifespan of the entire relationship. I think about negotiation as a never-ending game of chess. Where am I now? How can I end this conversation with me in the best position to ultimately get what I want? Another metaphor I often use is the concept of persuasive weight. So imagine you're in a weight room and you have all of these weights up against the wall, like the barbells from 5 pounds all the way up to like 120. And so you're working at the gym and your manager says, "Hey, Rich, I want you to get all those weights over here and move them all the way over there to the other side of the gym." Now, most likely you're not going to say, "All right, sounds good. And I'm going to try to do it all at one time." That would be unwise, unhealthy, and ineffective because it's too heavy. What you're going to do is you're going to start moving individual weights from one side of the room to the other. And so with these conversations, a lot of times what we try to do is we try to accomplish too much in the conversation. Mm. It is simply too much persuasive weight to handle in one conversation. So you need to take a step back, slow it down, and then think, best case scenario, what is the best position for me to be in after this conversation? How much am I even able to persuade this person in the middle of the conversation? And when we think about the definition of negotiation, the one that I use is incredibly broad. It's any conversation where somebody in the conversation wants something. And so we need to think about it in terms of what we want and what they want. So what is their goal in this conversation? They probably just want to give you the feedback and then get out, because it's probably uncomfortable for them too. And now you've received some information that you didn't have before. Going into the conversation, you might have been trying to set yourself up for a salary negotiation, or maybe even starting the discussion there. But now you've received more information that makes it clear that that outcome in this particular conversation today is untenable. So now I need to adjust my goal. So now what do I want in this conversation? In this situation, what I would want is information. I would want information and rationale. And then I'm going to stop and I'm going to take this information back to the Kwame lab and come up with a strategy and have another conversation. Because the thing is, it is not good to freestyle these conversations. You can't just come up with a strategy off the cuff. It's really tough to do. So in that moment, what you want is information. And so you go into a more inquisitive mode. So to utilize the compassionate curiosity framework in this situation, what I would do is I would get that information. And then I would first acknowledge emotions. In this situation, what is the emotion that the person is probably feeling? They're probably feeling a little bit anxious and they're probably feeling a little bit uncomfortable. And so I might just say that. I was like, okay, well, first of all, let me just say, I'm sure this is a tough conversation for you. It's a tough conversation for me. I just want to get that out of the way. And saying that shows a little bit of empathy and kind of relaxes people. It's like, okay, thank you. We could address that. What you recognize a lot of times is an emotional barrier is there, but we don't address it. We just jump to the substance and it still serves as an issue to true connection. So we acknowledge the emotion, but then we get curious with compassion. So I'm now going to ask these questions in an accusatory fashion, like a prosecutor would. You said you were going to give me a raise, didn't you? It's like, oh my goodness. We don't want that. So we would say, so tell me a little bit more about this review. And then how did you come up with these numbers? Help me to understand what I could have done better. Those type of things. So we are gathering information. And now with the...
What if you feel the feedback is unfair and that you actually did a great job? And so you may have to... Because I immediately thought, well, if I was beasting through the performance review cycle, I don't need you to tell me what I could have done better because I know that I did great.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, we still need to know where the gap in information lies, because you have a conclusion that's based off certain information. They might have a conclusion that's based off inappropriate or incorrect information. So with these questions, a lot of times what we're doing strategically is getting them to expose their gap in knowledge. And then the persuasive process really isn't argumentative. It's more educational. So we see those gaps. And so we say, okay, I think I see where the issue might have been, come from. Because you mentioned that I did not complete this project on time, correct? Correct. Okay, well, here, let me shoot you an email real quick, because I sent this email to Jody 2 days before the deadline with the completed project. There probably was just some kind of miscommunication on with Jody. I'm not sure what happened, but the project was done. And, you know, it's just a situation where you didn't know. So I apologize for not following up, but the information was the project was done on time. And so a lot of times when it comes to it, like I said, it's just a discrepancy between what happened and what they think happened. And by asking questions, we get that information to figure out what is the issue. Because so in a lot of these situations, we are building up ammunition through getting this information.
Okay. So you acquire information, you understand where the gaps are, the wheels are spinning, or at least if you're me, I'm probably anxious. I'm probably tight, to be honest. Even though I'm being thoughtful and I'm trying to be compassionate, mm-hmm. I'm probably tight that I'm getting information for the first time and it has a direct relation to my compensation. That meeting ends, and then I want to go back and strategize to have a follow-up conversation so that I can try to push for that raise or push for a change in my performance review score. What do I do then?
Well, pause. Let's take a step back, because remember, in that conversation, the goal was information, but I'm going to add another one. The next one would be a follow-up meeting, because you don't want the person to feel ambushed. And so that's the other thing that we want to get out of this. And so with the collaborative negotiation process step number 3, it's going to be, all right, so let's do a follow-up meeting. And what I do is I like just being radically candid with people. So I'd say, Rich, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. This is a bit of a surprise for me, because throughout the year, I felt as though I was receiving positive feedback. And this is the only time that I'm getting feedback that is at all negative. So frankly, I'm not prepared at this time to really dig deeply into this, because I was operating under another set of assumptions. When is a good time to have a follow-up meeting to discuss, now that we both have the same information?
I love that, man.
And so, yeah. So we're putting them on notice that, all right, we're going to have another conversation. But at the same time, it's really important to make sure that they have the perception or feeling of control. So we're not saying we need to have a follow-up meeting, period, because then the other person feels manipulated or controlled, and they feel as though you're asserting a disproportionate amount of power in the relationship. And when you think about power, think about a tube of toothpaste. If you push down on the power in one area, it's going to expand in another one. So what the person is going to do is they're going to remember that. It's like, I remember that time Kwame found out I made a mistake and then just was really mean about it and started dictating to me. And so they're going to hold on to that. And then they're going to find unique ways, often passive aggressive ways, to reassert their power in order to balance the scales that are in their head within the relationship. And so you want to always give them the perception of control. So I've led them by saying, I think it would be helpful to have another meeting. When would be a good time for you? So they're picking the time of the meeting, but it's kind of like an assumptive close. I know you think we need to have another meeting. I've come to that conclusion, but you get to pick the time. So they feel a little bit better about the ending of the interaction.
I love that, man. So hopefully I don't have to use that for my performance review conversation that's coming up in a few days, because that would be unpleasant. But at least now if it does, I have a framework for it. And other folks have a framework as well. So is there another step, or is that kind of the endpoint for how someone would apply the framework in this situation?
Yes-ish. I would say that is the endpoint for this particular conversation. But the way I think about it is like Steph Curry shooting threes. Even if you miss,
yeah,
we're not going to ever tell Steph to stop shooting threes. You just keep shooting threes. That's it. And so it's like a cycle. You just keep on using this framework over and over again. Every single conversation, personal life, professional life with these people. And you can use it in even innocuous conversations. It's just a good tool for establishing human connection. And the thing is, you're doing it in a way that sets you up to be more persuasive.
Yes. Yes. Yo, man. So I'm looking forward to reading the book. Title again?
The title is Nobody Will Play With Me, How to Use Compassionate Curiosity to Find Confidence in Conflict.
Yes. And where will people be able to find it? I'm assuming Amazon, but anywhere else that you're going to be marketing that hot product, moving that weight in these streets?
Absolutely. So it's going to be on Amazon for the first week, and for the first week only. The ebook version is going to be 99 cents. And for the all of the proceeds from the book sales for the first week are going to be donated to the United Way to help them to fight poverty.
Awesome, man. Where can people find you on social media, on the web, and anything else cool that you might have coming up? I mean, I imagine you've been spending all your time on the book, so that's probably the main thing that you've been working on. But where can people find you around the web?
Definitely. So check out the website, AmericanNegotiationInstitute.com, if you're interested in contacting me or bringing me in to do a workshop at your company. Also LinkedIn. That's my social media of choice. I think I'm a bad millennial, but I'm trying to get better. I have an Instagram now. And so it's a lot of quick tips about negotiation. You can keep up on my book list, and you can see lots of pictures of my beautiful son, Kai.
That's such a dad of you. And so you mentioned LinkedIn, and you said you're a bad millennial or whatever, but why do you like LinkedIn so much?
I like LinkedIn because it's targeted. People are on LinkedIn for a purpose. It is a business-oriented platform. With other ones, it's kind of unsure. It's kind of unclear. It's like, is it business? Is it personal? Is it pleasure? Blah, blah, blah. You know, I think I like the clarity of LinkedIn, and I don't feel bad about speaking about business. I don't feel bad about talking about my workshops or those type of things. Sometimes if I'm on Instagram and somebody's talking about business, I'm like, I'm not feeling that. You know, I'm here to look at cat videos. But I just like the clarity. That's just me. And there's nothing like legit about that. That's just my feelings about it. And it just makes life easier for me. It's easier to keep up with too.
Yeah. I mean, I have to use it for work just because I work in staffing or recruiting. So I see the value in it. I know a lot of people who still aren't on the platform. I'm not saying everybody needs to be on there, but if you're pursuing entrepreneurial things, which, you know, you are or we are, or if you're thinking about new opportunities out there, it's probably a platform that you want to visit and be on and look into periodically, because you never know when an opportunity might come your way. I've definitely made that mistake which is surprising to say, as someone that works in staffing, where I'm not following the messages as closely as I should. And then there are some things that have come in that have been related to stuff outside of work. So let me make that be clear. You know, I'm not on there looking for a new job, because people from work might hear this. Well, I'm also just not looking for a new job. But yeah, it's actually my favorite platform as well. At least when it comes to things that are going to help me get to where I want to go financially, professionally, wherever else. And then I'd say probably Instagram after that. I've grown to love the gram.
Definitely. Yeah, Instagram, I like it. And, you know, I tried out Snapchat for a little bit, but I think Instagram is a good option too, because it has the story feature where you can be a little bit looser, because you know it's going to disappear in 24 hours. But every once in a while, you'll see me post a business thing, but I know it's not going to disappear like on Snapchat. It'll actually just stay up there too. So I think for me, it's about, with Instagram, it's about maintaining a solid ratio between personal and business. And so I think it's probably like 90-10 or 95-5 personal to business. But I might tweak it later on, but we'll see.
Yeah, or you're going to find yourself managing like 3 different accounts, which I hope you bring on help if that is the case.
Oh, yeah. There is 0% chance I will ever manage more than 1 account. Never.
Oh, man. Well, Kwame, it's been great having you on the podcast. So yeah, thanks so much for joining us, man.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Yo, so shout out to Kwame for the release of his book, Nobody Will Play With Me, How to Use Compassionate Curiosity to Find Confidence in Conflict. I can't wait to apply some of what we talked about on the podcast, whether it's at work, whether it's in relationships, whether it's just getting a lower rate on something or a lower price. And we encourage you to go support this man and help him become a bestseller on Amazon. He's been all about helping the people for as long as I've known him, and I want to see this man be successful, well, more successful. Also, 100% of proceeds from first week sales will go to United Way. So you're also giving back to the community in the process.
Yeah, shout out to Kwame for joining the book club, unless that's the second book. But either way, I'm very proud of him. Okay, cool. Kwame's a cool guy. Was able to actually meet him at a quicker time span than Rich. Confirmed that he is not a catfish, so I can definitely co-sign for him being someone that y'all need to support.
Yes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. Today's review of the week comes from C.L. Furlow. That sounds like a hip-hop name if I ever heard one.
So Furlow hit us with the strong arm, thumbs up, clap, clap. And this one stomped me. What is that? The
fist? Power?
The Wakanda fist? Power fist. Yeah, we'll go with power fist. So strong arm, thumbs up, clap, clap, power fist, 5 stars.
Sounded like a video game code.
As an avid podcast listener, I have to say this is one of my favorites. I send your episodes to my friends almost daily. Appreciate it. Keep it up, homies. Looking forward to each new episode.
So CL Furlow, appreciate those 5 stars. And also appreciate you sharing PNB with your network. And we encourage others to do the same. The more people we reach, the more people we help.
So power fist back at y'all. And if you'd like to find us on social media, we're on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter, 2 T's everywhere else on earth. Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
Also, as we mentioned up top, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paybal.co/email. And you'll receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more.
So we'll be back next week with a special Veterans Day episode of sorts. So we want to thank everyone for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.